What does that mean?
It means you and I are about to disappear. Chapter 59. The morning activity was in full swing at the Phuket Backpacker Hostel. The little breakfast room was filled with young men and women from all over the world. Many sat in groups silently, hungover from partying the night before. Some of the surfers, getting a late start, were rushing through their coffee and eggs. A few of the more intrepid guests looked over maps or read details of smartphone destinations to hike in the nearby hills. The TV was on, but the sound was down, and few, if any, of the Westerners here knew anything about a shootout in the jungle many miles to the north. They were all here on vacation, and it would take an incoming tsunami to draw their attention to the local news. The breakfast room was open to the lobby, so every head turned when a group of 8 men, all bearded Westerners in their 30s and 40s, came through the front door, blocking out the harsh morning light with their bodies. They wore sunglasses and ball caps, headsets in their ears, and packs on their backs, and, most notably to every single person in the hostel, awake enough to see past their breakfast. All the men had big black and green guns in their hands. A young lady behind the counter at the entrance said not a word as the men hustled by her, and a couple of young surfers from South Africa moved themselves against the wall quickly as the men approached. The men shot straight to the back of the hostel and stepped around the door to room 12. And while 3 20-something backpackers just stood in the hall and stared, some of the intense gunmen opened the door and filed in, while others maintained rear security in the hall. Zoya Zakharova woke to a shake on her bare arm. She thought it was Kort, but was surprised to feel that he was wearing gloves. She sat up, rubbed her eyes, and felt the continued effects of the Vicodin in her blood, along with the pain in her shoulder that was even stronger than the narcotic. When she opened her eyes, she saw them. 4 men in the room with guns, more men in the hall outside. They were obviously Americans. The man in front said, "Ma'am, we're friends." And then, "Do you have any weapons on you?"
"Niet, no."
She rubbed her eyes again and looked around.
Where is Kort?
"He sent us to help you, ma'am. We've got a transport outside. I understand you're hurt. We have a litter if you can't walk."
"What's your name?"
she asked the man. He hesitated a moment, then said, "I'm Chris. I'm a friend of Kort's." She didn't know if she believed him.
"When do we see him?"
The man gave a little smile.
"You know Kort. You see him when he wants to be seen."
She looked around the room and saw that Fan Xiang was gone. Slowly, she understood what had happened. Kort had taken off with Fan, and he'd told the CIA where they could pick her up. And he hadn't even said goodbye. She was so mad she fought a scream. She wanted to kill him, and she wanted to cry. Matthew Hanley hated mornings at work. The inevitable new crisis, the never-ending procession of things to sign, people to talk to, fires to put out. Today was the same as the others, other than the fact that the scale was a little larger than usual. In front of him now was Suzanne Brewer, not his favorite person in the building by a long shot, and not someone he wanted to see waiting in the anteroom of his office when he walked in first thing, a still warm bagel in a bag in his hand. She had her ubiquitous crutches with her, but her leg had improved enough to where she was putting some weight on it. 25 minutes later, Hanley sat at his desk. The bagel was in the trash can, uneaten, and Hanley was looking at his phone, waiting for it to begin blinking. Brewer sat in front of him with her ubiquitous tablet computer, with which she maintained real-time contact with the communications team in charge of moving Kort Gentry's call from her phone to Hanley's office. They'd also be checking that the encryption was maintained throughout the call, as usual, but Gentry was a pro, and he never screwed up. Hanley's phone finally lit up, and Brewer looked down at her pad.
"Okay, that's going to be him."
Hanley nodded, watched it ring several times, then snatched it up.
"Hey, Kort, you okay?"
The pause was brief.
"I didn't know if you'd talk to me or not."
"You got me," he said. "Remember, I told you you'd always have a direct feed if you needed it."
"How could I forget? It was just a month ago. Bet you didn't think I'd need it so quickly."
Hanley paused.
"Well, I had half a guess you might have some concerns on this one."
Kort said,
"Let's get to it. First concern, Zoya Zakharova.
Hanley nodded as he spoke into the phone.
Yep, we got her. Travers and some of the guys picked her up this morning. Right now, she's in the infirmary at our embassy in Singapore. Doing fine, is what I hear. But I'd be holding out on you if I didn't mention she's pissed about you running out on her.
Yeah, Court said softly.
Hanley added,
Honestly, dude, I know how she feels. You ran out on us on this one, too.
Matt, tell me we did not sanction the murder of Fan Xiang's parents.
There was a silence while Hanley looked for the words. When he found them, he knew how they'd be received.
Depends on your definition of the word we.
Damn it! You are becoming one of them, aren't you? One of the paper pushers who parse every word like a Supreme Court justice. Have you even been in the job a whole month yet?
When I came into this office, I found a lot of balls in the air, and they were all coming down. I didn't throw them, but it's my job to catch them. If it weren't me sitting here, it would be another guy, and I remind you, most other guys around here still want you dead.
Court said,
This mission that I came in on the tail end of, this mission I was sent into that I knew nothing about, what is it called?
Brewer had an earpiece in where she could hear a violator's side of the conversation. She looked at her boss, obviously wondering how he would answer. She displayed the shock on her face when her boss answered with the truth.
It was called Aces High. We had an agent in the PLA, mid-level security guy. His name was,
Court said,
his name was Song Julong.
Another pause. Then,
Right. He wasn't very productive, just an army officer in a dead-end billet. Still, he thought the walls were closing in on him. We don't know why. He could never give us anything solid that led us to believe he was in danger. Perhaps there was some security review that shook him, some comment made by a colleague he interpreted to suggest he was in some trouble. He never told us.
Court interrupted.
I'll tell you. MI6 hired Donald Fitzroy to send men into Shanghai after Song. Those men scared Song into enacting his escape plan. His escape plan was earning his way out of China by coming up with a big score for the CIA. It was the only way you would pull him out. He did that by killing Fan's parents so Fan would run into the hands of the West.
Hanley did not respond to this.
Court said, That's right. Don't say anything. I'd rather you didn't lie and tell me you didn't know.
I didn't know. I don't know if that's the case. Maybe MI6 was trying to whack Song before he did anything stupid.
Well, that didn't work.
Look, Court. This op was begun by my predecessor, not me. Shit. You think I could have cooked all this up in the time I've been in here?
Court softened.
No, I don't think you thought it up. This smells like Denny Carmichael working with MI6. Still, you're the new guy. This is your watch.
Hanley said,
Right. Pulling a PLA officer out of mainland China isn't easy, as we've all seen in the past couple of weeks. Long ago, Song made a deal with Carmichael. If he ever needed to run, he could get us something big, earn the resources we'd put into him over the years. Denny agreed that if that happened, we'd get him out. And then? And then, a few weeks ago, he contacts us, tells us he killed Fan's parents, told Fan he had to run before he was executed, and told him how. We use the Taiwanese already in Hong Kong to go pick Fan up. Unfortunately, Colonel Dai got to the crossing, had men on both sides, and the whole thing went south. The Taiwanese missed Fan when he came over the border, and Fan didn't know what to do. He joined up with Wo Xing Wo. Fan did that on his own. Song didn't know that would happen.
Okay, then what?
The British were aiding us in Hong Kong while we looked for Fan, and they caught a lucky break when known Chinese intelligence cutouts contacted Sir Donald Fitzroy. Fitzroy was already there, as you just mentioned. Frankly, I did not know why he was there. Not sure I ever thought to ask.
Court said, And Song, did you get him out?
Hanley paused.
We tried. 3 days after Fan came over, Song went to the same crossing to make his run. We were ready and waiting for him, but he was strangled to death in the men's room on the mainland side of the border. One of Dai's men did it.
We'd ID'd the assassin the other day.
He was one of the two you killed in the Peninsula Hotel in Hong Kong.
Why didn't I know everything about Aces High from the beginning? Court demanded. Hanley snapped at this.
Damn it, son. You aren't still in your little private hitman job. You aren't working for a drug dealer in Sinaloa trying to whack a drug dealer in Guadalajara. You're back in the big leagues now. You don't get to know the whole game anymore. You get what we give you, and you work for us or you don't. I told you, you were free to take this job or leave it. And then you told me the life of a man I owe my own life to was on the line. You knew what I'd do. You used that against me. You never used to be so manipulative.
Hanley blew out a sigh.
I agree. I'm an insufferable shit now. Comes with the desk I sit at. He shrugged. If it makes a damn bit of difference to you, I don't enjoy it. Not sure I've looked myself in the mirror since I took this job.
Give it a try. You might find you look exactly the same as you did before you took that job. Hanley let the comment hang, wash over him, and then he said,
What about Fawn? Are you going to give him to us, or are we going to have to take him?
He doesn't know about the murder of his parents, and I'm not going to tell him. Still, he doesn't want to work for you. He just wants to be free.
We'd take care of him.
By taking away his liberty? Look at what you've accomplished already. He'll no longer work for China, and that's a real body blow to them. Having him out in the wind will hurt them as they try to redo everything he touched, change up everything he knew. They won't be able to trust their own systems. That's a victory for America, Matt. In this particular case, it's more than we deserve, and it's going to have to be enough.
Look, just think about...
See around, Matt.
Court!
Hanley shouted, but the phone call ended. As soon as Hanley hung up the phone, he looked up and saw Brewer standing up in front of him, off her crutches, tablet computer in her hand, a wide, wild look on her face.
What the hell is it?
Matt demanded.
Violator. His phone. It was new, as always, and his encryption software was set up as usual, but he'd not enabled the geolocation spoof correctly.
Meaning?
Meaning we have his exact location pinpointed. He's at a hotel in Pangna City, a couple hours north of Phuket. He's in a room there right now. We moved Ground Branch back to the airport at Phuket. Their helos could be there in less than 30 minutes.
Hanley sniffed.
Well, that's a motherfucking trap if I've ever seen one.
A trap?
Brewer was stunned, almost furious. This was the most excited Hanley had ever seen her, and he'd just popped her bubble. The director of National Clandestine Service shook his head now.
Not a trap. He's not going to hurt our guys. But there's something at that location he wants us to know about. Alert Jenner. Get his team there, stat, and have them in full loadouts, ready to fight a war if they have to. Stress to them that they are going into a hot LZ.
You think Fawn is there?
Hanley heaved his big shoulders.
I hope so. I hope there's a pot of gold at the end of the rainbow, too, but I sure as shit wouldn't bet on it.
The 3-story-high Tawisuk Hotel in Pangna had a flat roof, which made the CIA pilots of the 2 Russian helicopters streaking 100 feet over Petkasem Road very happy. Petkasem Road was too narrow to land in, but even if it had been twice as wide, the thick traffic and the jumbled strands of cable, electric, and telephone wires hanging from poles on both sides of the street would have made touching down there a risky proposition. But the roof of the Tawisuk Hotel was relatively pristine, so the first CIA helo flared to cut speed right in front of the hotel, spun hard on its X-axis, and then flew carefully but quickly towards the building. It was 8 p.m., dark outside, but the streets were full of cars and the sidewalks full of pedestrians. Everyone looked at the 2 new Russian-built Ka-62s as they flew in tandem, one hovering directly over the street while the other moved above the hotel. The 1st Special Activities Division Air Branch pilot maneuvered his craft over the roof 3 stories above the road, and, within 2 seconds, 6 armed men leapt off, dropped the 3 feet to the surface, and ran for the access stairs as a single unit. The helo didn't wait around. It shot forward, climbed up into the dark, and began circling, with a sniper strapped in on each side, scanning the hotel's windows with powerful optics. Only 5 seconds after the lead helo left the roof, the second helo flew closer to the building, and 3 long tactical rappelling ropes dropped out, uncoiling all the way down to the street.
Three men on board the KA-62 attached their terminal descenders to the ropes, then stepped out of the helo and began rappelling down the side of the hotel, face down, at speeds that made it look as if they were sprinting vertically. They landed at the front door, freed themselves from their lines, and brought their weapons to bear on men and women fleeing. The operators scanned faces and let everyone pass by, shouting in English and Thai for everyone to get the fuck out of the way. The helo above dropped the lines and flew just 5 feet over the roof, and then, at the back wall of the hotel, three more lines flew from the open hatch and spun down to the back door of the hotel, and three black-clad men rappelled down face first. The CIA paramilitary officers landed on their boots simultaneously, unhooked their lines from the beastly flying machine overhead, and lifted their weapons, pointing them at several men running out the rear door. The KA-62 lifted into the night, pulling the three tactical ropes up with it. Walt Jenner, team leader of the SAD ground branch team, was the first to recognize Sir Donald Fitzroy. The portly Englishman was rushing out of the hotel, being pulled along by four other men, Asians in business suits. Jenner had no idea Fitzroy would be here, but the dossier on his mission here in Southeast Asia had mentioned him as a kidnapped victim of the Chinese malefactors in the op, and it was known that court violator Gentry had been attempting to secure Fitzroy's release. Jenner quickly deduced that if this man coming his way was Fitzroy, then the four Asian men in suits pulling and pushing him along must be Chinese PLA men.
Freeze!
Jenner put his laser sight on one of the Chinese, and the two ground branch paramilitaries with him, Greer and Stapleton, each picked their own target. The five men stopped. Fitzroy instantly doubled over in exhaustion. Clearly, they'd been running down the stairs. Jenner said,
"Everybody put your hands up!"
One of the four Chinese men reached quickly into his suit coat. Greer fired three suppressed rounds from his HK-MP7 personal defense weapon and struck the man in the chest and solar plexus, and he dropped down, dead. The others raised their hands. Greer, Stapleton, and Jenner pushed the remaining four men to the ground, and Jenner scanned for more threats while the other two began zip-tying their prisoners, including the Englishman. While this was going on, the voice of CIA officer Chris Travers came through Jenner's headset.
Delta One, this is Two. How copy?
Solid copy. Go for one. You got the target?
Court Gentry's phone was still broadcasting from a room inside the hotel. They'd been able to discern in the helo during their landing that his signal was coming from one of the rooms on the northwest corner. This meant the six-man team that descended from the roof had to search rooms 310, 210, and 110 in order to find Gentry himself. Travers said,
"Negative. No joy. Say again, no joy. I have the phone in room 310, and it's got a note with it, wrapped around it with a rubber band."
Jenner and his two men began walking the prisoners to the hotel's staircase to the roof for extraction. When he heard there was a note left with the phone, Jenner let out a little sigh.
"That dickhead Gentry is always playing games. What's it say?"
Travers's voice crackled through the headset.
"Hi, boys. Thanks for dropping in. The gray-haired Brit missing his fingers is to be handled gently. Any Chinese nationals you find are hostile. Keep an eye out for Colonel Dai Longhai. He is the center of the opposition. Sorry I couldn't make your night with a personal appearance, but if you are reading this, then you probably just kick some ass, so it was worth gearing up. Get out of here before the local popo shows up to take you someplace where you'll have to eat fish head soup for the next 20 years.
Travers added. He signed it Sierra 6. Sierra 6 had been Gentry's call sign when he served in CIA's ground branch 5 years earlier. Jenner spit on the floor in the stairwell in anger. He could hear the helos getting in position for the extraction.
"Fucker," he said into his mic.
Travers said, "I don't know, boss. He's a pain, but you kinda have to appreciate the man's style." Jenner ignored the comment and looked at Fitzroy.
"Which one of these guys is Dai?"
Fitzroy struggled up the stairs with his hands behind his back.
"He's not here. The man you shot was Major Xi, second in command. The other three are men who work for Dai."
Jenner and the entourage reached the roof a minute later. Sirens approached the hotel from all directions. The first helo lifted off with half the unit, and the second came in, but slower than Jenner wanted. He called the pilot through his radio to encourage him on.
"Delta One to Kilo Alpha One Two.
Hurry up the exfil, bro. None of us down here want to eat fish head soup for the next 20 years.
Travers was already in the other helo, but he actuated his mic just to laugh into it. Chapter 60. 3 days after Sir Donald Fitzroy was extracted by the CIA, he sat on his bed in his suite at the Mandarin Oriental Singapore and looked down at his injured hand. One of the best orthopedists in Asia had spent an hour with him yesterday, and there would be a surgery at some point to properly address the savage wound, but for now there was no emergency medical treatment necessary, so Sir Donald just treated himself with scotch, luxury, and solitude. To that end, he sipped a 25-year-old single malt that wasn't half bad. He was feeling better now, and the turnaround began with the first thing he did when he left the care of the Americans. He called his daughter in the UK, spoke to her and his granddaughters, and laughed and joked and made funny sounds, and through it all, he fought tears. Because he could not remember ever being so thankful or happy for anything in his entire life as that damn phone call. After he arrived, he'd had clothes and food and booze all brought to his room, and he'd spent the last 48 hours or so looking out the floor-to-ceiling windows at the skyline. And while he wrapped himself in the splendor of comfort and riches and safety, he continuously checked a satellite phone he'd had purchased and delivered the moment he arrived. He'd left a message with his secretary back at his office in London that she might get a call from a man reticent to give much information about himself. It wasn't much to go on, but his secretary had been with him for years, and she remembered Gentry, his soft American voice, and she knew that he alone was to get Sir Donald's satellite number. It was noon on the third day when his mobile phone rang. He all but leapt across the expansive suite to get to it, but he answered it warily.
Yes?
The boys treated you okay? It was Court.
The men in black, yes, of course. Quiet professionals, all.
Did they get Di?
No. He was close by, watching the whole thing fall apart in front of him. I considered telling your paramilitaries that he was near, but that would have kept them on the ground longer than I wanted to stick around, and he probably would have run anyway.
Court said, fair enough. Fitz said,
I owe you, lad. I owe you bigger than I can pay.
There was a long hesitation, and then Court said,
you know people in Taiwanese intelligence?
Of course I do.
Good. Fan wants to go to Taiwan. I'd like to make it happen. Of course, the Taiwanese might decline to take him if he refuses to give them information, but he'll probably agree to help them if they agree to let him live on Taiwanese soil. Taiwan intelligence can share his product with America if they want to.
I'd be happy to set up a handover.
They talked about specifics for a few minutes. Court had a plan in mind. Don just had to connect Fan directly with someone at Taiwan intelligence and then step away. So it was nothing to the well-connected Englishman at all. When that was organized, Don asked,
anything else you need?
No, thanks. I'm thinking about going dark again for a while.
Fitzroy said,
that's what I'm doing at the moment. Or my version of it, anyway. I'm at the Mandarin Oriental in Singapore. Come here, let's get drunk together. Bring your girlfriend, the one you called a spider monkey.
Court said,
CIA has her. It's the best thing for her.
But not for you. She was good for you. You need friends.
There was an extra long pause, and then Court said,
I wonder, when this is all over, if I end up finding out that you were the one who lied the least.
Fitzroy looked down at his three-fingered hand.
That's a bloody sad measure to use in appraising your friendships.
Court sniffed.
It's not about friendships. That train left the station a long time ago. It's about alliances. It's about making a pact with whoever can help me get through the day.
Fitzroy shook his head.
Bollocks, Court. That's not you. With you, it's about doing the right thing, come what may. You'll do it with an ally. You'll do it with an enemy. Or you'll do it alone. You'll die before you go against what you believe in. It makes you the one good man in all this.
It makes me exploitable and expendable.
Too true. No argument there, lad.
Court changed the subject.
You are in Singapore? I figured you want to get back to the UK.
Heavens, no. I've got my own trust issues now that I have to deal with. MI6 used me for a job. The job went sideways, and they went home.
He smiled.
I am a bit of a man without a country myself after all this. Welcome to my world.
After a moment, he added, We'll see each other again someday, if it's in the cards. Fitzroy smiled into the phone.
I'd wager that we will. Good luck to you, lad. You too, Fitz.
2 days later, Court Gentry and Fan Qiang stood in the doorway of a hangar at Kuala Lumpur International Airport, and they looked out together at the dull and cloudy morning. An Airbus A330-200 landed on the runway in the distance, taxied in their direction, then rolled to a stop on the tarmac just 100 yards away. It wore the markings of EVA Air, a Taiwanese national and international carrier, and Court had followed its flight path on the internet as it took off this morning from Taipei and flew straight here. As a set of rolling stairs was driven up to the main cabin door, Court put his arm around the smaller Chinese man next to him. The two had spent a lot of time together over the last week, virtually every moment, and Court had found himself wholly enjoying the experience. They'd played first-person shooter video games at a hostel near the Malaysian border, lain in hammocks and drunk beers while watching surfers at the beach, and sat around in hot, cheap hotels in the jungle playing cards. All the while, Fan regaled Court with explanations of difficult mathematical concepts, few of which Court understood, but at least it helped the time go by. The week had been easy and fun, and he and Fan Qiang had become friends, but Court did not tell the younger man how nervous he was about today. There was much that could go wrong here with the handoff to the Taiwanese, but at least the aircraft came from Taiwan, and the men getting off the aircraft were Taiwanese intelligence officials. Court had used the internet to look up the men Fan had been speaking with over the last 2 days, just to make sure this wasn't some kind of an American double-cross. He couldn't be certain it wasn't, not even now as the Taiwanese officials climbed down from the Taiwanese plane that just arrived directly from Taiwan. But then again, Court wasn't a terribly trusting guy. He forced a light tone to his voice.
All right, Jia. You ready to go to Taipei?
Fan nodded.
Yes, Chad. I am ready.
Court went with the name Chad, just to give Fan something to call him. The two Taiwanese spooks stepped forward, shook hands with Fan, and spoke for a moment, then shook Court's hand as well.
Thank you for your assistance, sir, one of the men said. Mr. Fan tells me you have been incredibly helpful.
Court replied,
Take care of him. He's a good man.
Court and Fan embraced.
Fan said, Goodbye, brother. If you are ever in Taipei, I hope you will find me.
Court smiled.
I hope you are hiding well enough that I won't be able to.
Fan nodded, wiped a tear from his eye, and turned towards the airplane. After bows from the two intelligence officers to Court, they turned and began walking with the defector between them. Court stood there in front of the doorway watching them leave, then his eyes tracked off into the distance again, beyond the Taiwanese jet, beyond the runway and the airport terminal on the far side. As he stood there, the cloudy day darkened even more, the air felt heavier, the gunmetal gray sky suddenly hung low and oppressive, as if all the possibilities of life had been squeezed down to this 100-yard stretch of hot tarmac between himself and the plane. From directly behind him, he heard a voice.
Sometimes there is no winner, only losers.
He did not turn around. He recognized the voice of Colonel Dai Longhai, knew the man had the drop on him, and he did not want to make any sudden moves. Instead, he just watched Fan continue along the tarmac with the men, willed him to walk faster or to turn around with the Taiwanese so they could see the danger here at the hangar door. To Court's surprise, Colonel Dai walked up onto Court's left and stopped, his own eyes on Fan Qiang. Dai said,
I lose. You lose.
Court turned and looked at Dai, and he realized now that the man's hands were cuffed behind his back. Now a new voice spoke up from behind. This man spoke American English, strong, tough, and very familiar.
You're getting on that bird too, Six. We all are.
Court turned away from Dai all the way around and found himself facing Zack Hightower, his former team leader with the CIA's goon squad. Zack was back working with the CIA, in what capacity Court did not know for certain, but his job clearly had something to do with guns, because he held an HK-416 rifle in his hand now, leveled at Court's chest. He stood alone in the small doorway, but now the main hangar door slid open, 10 feet off Court's right, and an entire Special Activities Division ground branch field team walked out, each man carrying an automatic weapon. Court scanned them one by one. Jenner, Travers, McLean, Greer, Stapleton, Rogers, Lorenzi, and a couple of other assholes Court had never met. And Hightower. Zack fucking Hightower. Zack said,
"Buddy, the U.S. taxpayer just flew me all the way around the motherfucking world just to make sure you didn't do nothing crazy the next 30 seconds. I'd really hate to shoot you, but you know me, and you know I will if I have to."
"What? What the hell is going on, Zack?"
Zack Hightower did not respond to the question. Instead, he said,
"Chris is gonna frisk you, Court. You try some shit, and I'll just stand here and gun you both down."
Travers handed his rifle to Greer. Then he stepped forward, looking at Hightower.
"Thanks a lot, Dick."
He moved Dai over to the other men on his team, returned, and patted Court down. He took a phone, a folding knife, some cash, and a pair of keys to a scooter. He reached up to feel if Court had a knife hanging from a necklace. Court had pulled a similar item off Chris Travers just a couple of months ago, so this felt like a bad dream to Court. As he did this, Chris spoke softly.
"Sorry, man. I'm a friend, but I'm a friend with a job to do."
Court didn't reply. Chris Travers stepped away, and Court turned to look back over his shoulder. Fan was looking back now. He saw Dai with his hands behind his back. He saw a huge group of tough-looking Americans with guns. He saw Chad looking in his direction. The small Chinese man tried to run now, but the two Taiwanese with him tackled him to the tarmac. Court spun to race to help him, but after a shout from Hightower, Travers took Court down at his ankles, and other CIA men jumped onto the pile. Jenner and Stapleton ran onto where Fan was pinned face down to the tarmac, and they helped the Taiwanese intelligence officers get control of the small PLA sergeant. Eventually, they pulled him back to his feet.
"No!"
shouted Court.
"No!"
Court was pulled up as well, and led along by the big group of CIA paramilitaries. When they caught up with Fan and the men holding him, Fan Xiang said,
"Chad, did you know? Did you know this the entire time?"
Court shook his head, still in a state of shock. What came out of his mouth was barely a whisper.
"I am so sorry."
Everyone started towards the stairs of the huge aircraft, but after just a few more steps, Court broke away from the hands holding him and took a step closer to Fan. Hightower shouted from behind,
"Bro, don't do it! We have orders to drop you dead and leave you on the tarmac. None of us want to be here and have this go down this way. It's a fucked up scenario, but you know how this shit goes. We do what we're fucking told."
Court looked at Jenner, at Travers, at McLean. He wanted to say something, but nothing would come out. He turned back to Fan.
"Look, I swear to you, this looks bad, but they will treat you well."
"Forcing me to do something I don't want to do? To go somewhere I have no desire to go? That is treating me well?"
The group walked on. Everyone went up the stairs, but by now the Taiwanese men had peeled away, and it looked to Court like they weren't even going to board the plane. Probably, he reasoned, because this plane wasn't going to Taiwan. Court boarded the aircraft along with everyone else, and the door was closed behind him. He entered the first class section and saw that Fan was being led to a seat. Two armed SAD men dropped in next to him, their shoulders to his shoulders. Colonel Dai was led to the back row of first class. He was seated against the window, and several men positioned themselves around him. The other SAD guys from the tarmac found seats of their own here in first class. While Court stood there next to Hightower, Suzanne Brewer stepped out of the cockpit. Court had never met her in person, but he'd had a brief video chat with her the moment she became his handler, so he had no trouble recognizing her. She walked up the aisle towards him, and he noticed she had a limp and a little wince when she walked, as if she were in pain. Brewer looked past Court and to Fan Xiang.
"Mr. Fan, my name is Suzanne, and I am in charge.
You have my word that you will be able to make your own determination if you want to work for us.
She smiled a little.
After we get some preliminary information, which I am afraid we will require.
So I work to earn my freedom,
Fan said.
Lady, do you know how many times someone has said that to me in the past month?
Brewer smiled ruefully, like she really gave a shit what this man had been through. Court saw through it, and Fan would as well. She said,
A week from now, you won't know why you were so hesitant to come with us. We will bend over backwards for you.
She turned away, looked to Court, and said,
Follow me.
I'll stay with Fan, Court said.
No, you will follow me.
Brewer stopped at Dai now.
Colonel, we spoke on the phone yesterday.
Dai nodded.
I only hope you will live up to your agreement.
Likewise, sir, she said. We have every intention of rewarding you if you are forthcoming with us. Many people at my agency were skeptical that someone with your background could be persuaded to provide assistance to the United States. I convinced them to give you a chance, and now you have just that.
Brewer looked at him with unconcealed skepticism.
A chance.
The colonel looked out the window.
If I return to China, I would be tortured to death. I know that, and you know that. So there is no need for me to engage in a charade that my decision is due to any political awakening on my part. I am here because I place some value on my life. No other reason.
Court and Dai made eye contact, and Dai said,
Interesting. You look even less pleased to find yourself in this situation than I do.
Court said nothing. He just started following Brewer to the curtains to the next section. Then he stopped. He stood there a moment longer, turned around, and looked hard at all the Americans sitting here with guns on their chests. They all stared back at him, wondering if they'd have to get up and subdue the gray man. Court asked,
Is it always going to be like this? Every time we see each other, we have to figure out if anybody is going to pull iron and start shooting?
Jenner was up front. He stood, turned, and spoke up for the group.
That's your call, tough guy. We can be friendly, or we can be unfriendly.
All I know is,
Court interrupted,
All you know is jack shit. Every story has good guys and bad guys. You don't even fucking know it, but on this op, you, me, Brewer, Hanley, we're the villains.
Court motioned to Fan Xiang. He seemed so small tucked in between all the jocked up American muscle.
That man's the good guy.
Jenner shrugged, then sat back down. Court sighed, looking around at all the men. He said,
Treat him right. He's just a kid.
Travers spoke up now.
We got him, Six. Don't worry. Our orders are to let him do anything he wants but run away. White glove treatment. You have my word.
Court looked at Fan.
I'm sorry, Xiang.
Fan Xiang looked away. As Court headed towards the next section, Hightower called out from his seat next to Jenner.
Good to see you, brother. Sorry you lost this round. Keep your chin up. You'll get another shot.
Court's eyes were still on Fan.
Fuck you, Zack. You're not my brother.
He disappeared through the curtain. A minute later, Court sat alone in an economy seat and watched Brewer talking on the phone. The aircraft started moving as his CIA handler reported in, probably to Hanley, letting him know they were on the way. A few men and women Court took as analysts, operation officers, and security sat around the large economy cabin, but Court was sequestered from all of them by more than a dozen empty rows. When Brewer finally ended her call, she limped over and sat down next to him.
I'm truly sorry we have to meet face to face for the first time under these circumstances.
Court gazed out the portal next to him as the aircraft went to full power and began racing down the runway.
I thought Fan was the pawn in all this. Turns out it was me.
Brewer said, Take a look at a chessboard. There are lots of pawns.
She added,
Why in the hell are you feeling sorry for him? Sure, he'll get a long debrief, months for sure, quite possibly a couple of years. But he'll have a nice apartment, whatever he wants to eat, and armed protection from those trying to kill him. And then, at some later date, he'll get witness protection. He'd never get a security clearance from the U.S.,
but I know there are a dozen agencies, my own, in fact, who would employ him gainfully well past his retirement date 40 years from now.
Court said nothing.
That little bastard up there is going to end up a lot better than me, and a hell of a lot better than you.
Court said, "The whole operation was shit, killing his parents, so he'd be forced to run into our arms."
Brewer replied, "Not my fault."
"No," Court said, "but dragging him back to the U.S. so that a dirty mission ends up as a success, that's all on you."
"You found him for us," she said coolly. "You grabbed him for us. You brought him for us."
Court leaned his head back. "The U.S. flag is supposed to represent something, not this."
Brewer said, "We saved his life. If Fan Xiang went back to Taiwan, he'd do it with a target on his head. Chinese intelligence has infiltrated Taiwanese intelligence, and there is no way Fan would get to that island without Dai's replacement knowing about it. Fan would be a marked man, and he'd be dead in a year."
"That was his decision to make," Court said. He was barely listening.
"Some people think zoos are terrible places," Brewer said, causing Court to look at her for the first time since he sat down. "And for some species, they are. The predators, I mean. Put a lion in a cage and you've taken everything from him. But the prey? The gazelles and the rabbits, the lemmings and the sea otters? Put them in a zoo and their lives improve. No fighting, no slaughtering, all their needs met. The zoo is the closest thing to utopia that we humans can craft on Earth."
Court glowered at her. "We're doing Fan Xiang a favor. And in doing so, we happen to suck all his intel value from him."
"He chose to work with Unit 61398.
"Actually, no, he didn't."
"Well, he chose to run from it."
"We fucking set him up!"
"Don't say we. I didn't, you didn't, Hanley didn't. It happened. Yes, it happened, but the person who started the ball rolling was the former head of the National Clandestine Service, and he's not around to answer for it. We cleaned up a mess. That's all."
Brewer was right. Court knew. In this dirty world, Fan Xiang's outcome was as good as it was going to get. Court just shook his head. "How did you manage to score Colonel Dai?"
"We reached out to him, got his number off one of his captured men, told him we were his only lifeline."
Court said, "Still, China will kill his family for this."
"We've made it look like you killed him in the field. China is angry at you, not Dai."
Court's jaw muscles flexed in anger, but he smiled. "You're a bitch."
"You felt bad about Fan's family, but just by you being you, you saved Colonel Dai's family. That should make you feel good."
"And yet I don't."
"You brought us Fan Xiang, and you brought us Zoya Zakharova. You helped us to get Colonel Dai. You kept Don Fitzroy alive, and deeply indebted to you, which could be of some use to us in the future. By any measure, you've done one hell of a job, even taking into account your insubordination, your double-cross, and your general misbehavior."
Court said nothing.
"I would prefer an asset who obeys all directives at all times, but I will settle for one who over-delivers on his objective as an end result."
"So I get a gold star?"
"The only gold stars the CIA gives out are for death in the field, and then only to actual employees, not contracted assets. You get my appreciation."
She smiled.
"You'll get a gold star in a forgotten file when you die. It will have to wait for now, but I doubt it will wait for too long."
"With friends like you."
"All your friends fucked you over, Court. Face it, you are better off with a straight shooter like me managing you."
Court just stared back at her blankly. After a moment, she leaned back in her chair and crossed her legs. Court saw her wince when she did it. He looked at her leather boots and wondered if they were too tight or if she had some sort of an injury, which she was trying to hide for some reason.
"So," Court asked, "what now?"
"We're stopping off in Germany for fuel and to pick up some analysts who will help with Fawn's initial debrief. We can drop you there. You can drift off into the mist if you want. That's your thing, isn't it? We'll give you cash, documents, whatever you need."
"I figured you'd tell me you had another job for me."
"I do, but I didn't think you'd take it."
"You're right. I won't.
You're always right, aren't you?
Brewer said, You're getting the idea.
He rubbed his eyes. What's going on with Zoya?
Brewer smiled. Did she tell you her father was Fyodor Zakharov?
Court cocked his head. I don't know who that is. She just said he was in the military.
Yeah, like Patton was in the military. Colonel General Fyodor Zakharov, the head of GRU, he was killed in Dagestan, the highest-ranking military officer killed in Russia or the Soviet Union since the Second World War.
Court didn't imagine that a claim had been well-received by a teenage girl who had already lost her mother and was soon to lose her brother. He was still thinking about this when Brewer spoke again.
I can see you have feelings for her. I see it in her eyes, too.
See what?
She has feelings for you. More.
Hell, she'd jump in front of a train for you. When Court said nothing to this, she added,
She had one request. A demand, really.
What's that?
That she got to see you again before we pulled her in. She knows she will spend the next several months locked in a safe house undergoing vetting.
Brewer smiled.
Kind of like Fawn. And Dai. She's really rather lovely. First ex-SVR operative I've ever met that I didn't want to go have myself steam cleaned after the conversation. I look forward to working with her once we get her operational.
Wait, she's going to work for you? As an asset?
Eventually, yes. If we can get her vetted, she will be a singleton agent under contract, kind of like you.
This bothered Court. He thought it was too dangerous, but he held his tongue. Brewer, however, vastly misread his silence.
Look, Violator, don't go getting anything in your head about you and your new girlfriend running around the world together fighting the good fight. If she works for CIA, you'll probably see her once in a blue moon, if ever.
You mean we won't have annual conferences for singleton assets? Team-building retreats?
You joke, but I read people, Violator. Even people like you. I see how you feel about her. I can't see into the future, but I don't envision any operational situation that involves the two of you working in concert.
I didn't take this job to meet girls.
Brewer laughed. When we get to Frankfurt, she'll be waiting. She'll get on this plane for the trip to D.C., and you'll be free to melt into Europe.
For the first time since the tarmac in Kuala Lumpur, Court felt better. Not good, just better. Epilogue. The covert CIA flight landed in Frankfurt in the early evening and taxied to a hangar used regularly by U.S. military and intelligence aircraft. 20 minutes after touchdown, Court walked through the space-age-looking Hilton Frankfurt Airport, opened the door to a small conference space on the second floor, and entered the sterile room. Zoya sat on the table, her legs hanging off the side. Court hadn't showered in 24 hours, and other than a quick wash-up in the aircraft lavatory, he'd done nothing to mitigate the fact he'd been living in cheap guesthouses in the jungles of Southeast Asia for the past week. Zoya Zakharova, in contrast, wore a dark blue business suit. Her dark brown hair was pulled back in a short ponytail. He couldn't see her wounded shoulder through the clothing, but her face gave off no hint of the damage and pain she'd suffered 6 days earlier in Phuket. She smiled at Court as she slid off the table and walked across the little room.
How are you? She asked.
I'm okay. How about you? Your shoulder is okay?
Hurts a little. Not a lot.
Good. Zoya said,
I'm sorry, Court.
She sat in a chair and Court sat next to her, close but not close enough to touch. Court looked her over. What did you do that I don't know about?
Nothing. I just mean, I'm sorry your operation didn't turn out exactly how you wanted it to. Still, I agree with Brewer. Fan needs to come to the U.S. The Chinese will kill him in Taiwan, and the West needs the intelligence he has.
After a long time, Court said, I feel bad for Xiang, though. This isn't his world. He's just a goofy kid who'd rather be playing video games or something. It was silent for nearly a minute. Court wanted to kiss Zoya, but he wasn't sure if he should. Finally, he said, I'm sorry. Sorry for leaving you in Thailand.
Zoya nodded. Brewer explained why you did it. You were protecting me. You were about to run off with Fan Xiang, and you did not want me to be an accomplice to your action.
Court said, I'm pleasantly surprised Brewer told you the truth and didn't spin that for her own benefit.
Just when he felt like he had to, she turned and looked up at him. Before he could react, she took his face in her hands, leaned in, and kissed him hard. It was another full minute before they pulled back and looked into each other's eyes. She said,
You and I made a good team over there.
Damn right we did.
Misty tears formed in her eyes. Court cocked his head. He didn't understand what was wrong. She understood his look.
Brewer won't let us be together, she said. I wanted to come visit you while I am held in isolation. Could be for months. She said no. I guess I understand. But still, I don't trust her. I think she's hiding something.
Everyone I've ever met is hiding something, Court said.
Zoya nodded thoughtfully, wiped her eyes with a tissue she pulled from her pocket. Then she and Court kissed again.
Where are they taking you? Court asked.
Washington, D.C. After that, I'm just along for the ride.
Ever been there?
To Washington? I'd rather not answer that question.
Court repeated himself.
Everyone is hiding something.
Zoya shrugged a little.
Where are you going?
I'm a free man as of right now. I can walk out of this hotel and go anywhere I want.
You didn't answer my question.
Only because I don't know. I might just wander for a while.
A vacation?
Court chuckled to himself.
I guess so. Some place where the beer is good and the people don't get up in your business.
You've earned the vacation.
Court said,
You should come with me.
Zoya smiled broadly.
No way Brewer would let that happen.
We could run down to the tarmac and hijack an airplane.
Zoya's laugh filled the conference room.
You are a troublemaker, aren't you?
Sometimes, maybe.
There was a quiet knock at the door, and then it opened. A pair of men Court recognized from the flight leaned in. He knew they were CIA National Clandestine Service officers, and he assumed they were here for Zoya. One said,
Ma'am, it's time to go.
Zoya grabbed Court quickly and kissed him hard, held on tight, but harder with her left than her right because of the injuries to her right shoulder. When she pulled away, she said,
You be careful, whatever you do.
Court smiled.
I will.
And I'll take a rain check on that hijacking. Next time we're together, we are totally flying off into the sunset.
I like that.
Zoya left the conference room, and Court stepped out a minute later. The hotel lobby was quiet, and he left without anyone in the building ever noticing him at all. An hour later, he stood in the Frankfurt Hauptbahnhof and scanned the massive board of destinations, 100 or more cities there for his choosing. He could take a train north to Malmö or south to Athens, west to Dublin, or east to Moscow. Like a restaurant's menu, he perused the options for 10 minutes. Finally, he decided it didn't really matter. He made a choice, bought a second-class ticket for the next departure, climbed aboard, and went looking for a quiet compartment to get some sleep while the train took him far away from here. This has been an Audible Studios production of Gunmetal Grey. Written by Mark Greeny. Performed by Jay Snyder. Producer, Mike Charsick. Copyright 2017 by Mark Strode Greeny. Production copyright 2017 by Audible Inc. Audible Studios is a division of Audible Inc.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.